At lunchtime today, there's going to be an event called Soapbox Scientists on the south bank of the River Thames, when a number of female scientists, all wearing white coats and armed with their specialities, will engage passers-by on the wonders of science, from levitating trains, apparently, to visiting Mars, and how maths can help control infectious diseases. The idea is to demonstrate how relevant and interesting science can be today. One of those scientists has very kindly got up early to join us and give us a preview. Welcome, Sarah Durant. You're a senior research fellow at the Zoological Society of London. And I'm just guessing that that has something there for your specialism to do with animals.
Yes, you're correct. Yes. So my I specialise specifically in cheetah. And I'm going to be talking at Soapbox Science about...
As in the big cats.
As in the big cats, yeah, the big fast cats. And I'm going to be talking about the endless fascinating world of cheetah at Soapbox Science today.
It's a very accessible side of science, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's... it's a hope that, that we can use cheetahs to get people engaged with science and thinking about biology of animals in general and their ecology and their conservation issues. I'm principally a conservation scientist.
We've got a couple of minutes to focus on cheetahs now, and you've got some cheetah artifacts with you.
Yes. So one of the things I'm going to do is talk about how you get to grips with cheetah, how you recognise cheetahs, how you tell different cheetahs from apart from each other. So each
is cheetah, that a cheetah skull first?
Yep. So here we have a cheetah skull, which I'm going to
from a slight distance looks a bit like a dog skull with big teeth.
Yeah, it's got big canines, but it is it's primarily adapted for a meat-eating diet, whereas dogs, their carnassals won't be quite as sharp.
It's surprisingly small, about the size of your hand.
It is quite small, and that's because they're built for speed. So their jaws are built for they're light, so that they can run really fast.
Are they not very clever? Small brain, I'm thinking.
I think you'll find that they're highly intelligent.
I'm so sorry.
Carry on.
No, they can run very, very fast. And they keep their skull light so that they can get up speed. And that's the reason why you'll see their skulls much smaller than a leopard, which is a similarly sized cat. The skull's much smaller.
Edward Girardet, you're into cheetahs, apparently.
Well, in a different way. I mean, my travels in Africa, I'd meet people like Tony Fitzjohn, who was the leopard man of East Africa. And also, I have a dog, a Pyrenean mountain dog, which when I was last in Namibia, several farmers told me that they had actually brought in these Namibian mountain dogs, Pyrenean mountain dogs to Namibia, because they're used in the Pyrenees or in Europe against wolves, and they're used to protect the sheep flocks against cheetahs, although I could never quite see a cheetah actually killing a sheep. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, no, there is conflict. Most cheetahs, a lot of people don't realise that most cheetahs actually live outside the protected area system. And there they come into conflict with livestock, and they may kill goats and sheep. If there's a lot of alternative prey around, then they won't attack livestock. But where there's sparse wild prey, then they may attack livestock. And a lot of communities all across Africa use dogs traditionally, that they go out with the herdsmen during the day, and their barks can actually alarm and alert the herdsmen to a predator approaching.
In the event, though, would a dog be a fair match for a cheetah?
A small dog. I mean, traditionally the dogs are much smaller, and the cheetah would probably run away from a dog. I mean, a leopard might actually kill a dog, but normally a cheetah will be seen off by a dog.
I nearly stopped you from being more specific about the cheetah and subspecies and so on. You were going to elaborate, weren't you? You've got photos there.
Well, yes. Yeah, so these are photos of different individuals. So part of my work is running a long-term research project in the Serengeti. And we recognise individuals all through their lifetime. And so I'm bringing these along to Soapbox Science to let people have a go at seeing whether they can recognise cheetahs, whether they can tell.
Oh, as in one cheetah does not look quite like another?
No, they all look very, very different. No one spots.
I'm peering at those photos over the microphone and they...
Yeah, I'm looking at them here, and they do all look very different, and I'd never thought of that. I've seen cheetahs in the wild. I think they're a magnificent animal, an incredibly fast animal. And you're just holding up a couple of them here, and their colourings are totally different. Okay, they've all got spots, But one is a sort of more beige with black spots. One is much paler, and so the spots stand out much more. And this one at the bottom looks heavier as well.
Yeah, she's actually just had a big meal, actually. So she's very well
eaten
fed.
Another creature.
This is almond.
Do their spots adapt to the environment? Are they coloured according to where they live and so on?
Not so much. I mean, there is one variation. I mean, these are all from the Serengeti. So there is some variation. There's what's known as king cheetah, which has a more like serval elongated coat pattern. But generally, the spots, they're spotted in most areas of their range.
How closely do you work with the cheetahs? I mean, are you going to be known as the Cheetah Lady of Africa?
Oh, dear. I started off living in the Serengeti. I was very privileged to spend a lot of time with cheetahs as part of my field work. And so I was working. My life was intimately connected to them, because cheetahs would move out onto the short grass plains and I had to move out onto short grass plains and back into the woodlands as the rain stopped. So I got very involved with the life cycle of the cheetah.
Can we talk briefly about women in science, which is partly why you're here, and actually the lack of them?
Yeah, so there's a real problem in engaging the public profile of women in science in particular, and this is part of the reason why Soapbox Science was organised, is that there's a bias against women in many aspects of science life. So you'll find less senior authors are women. You'll find they're less likely to get invited to speak at conferences. All these biases mean that the voice of women is diminished. And Soapbox Science is really sort of organised to try and give women a voice, give women scientists a voice.
I saw a quite brilliant advert on American TV how telling girls they were pretty as they were growing up subtly, you know, weaned them off cleverer things, and they should be told they're pretty brilliant instead. It was a good thing, and an obvious underrepresentation.
Now, I think that's changing in this country, and you're absolutely right, clearly, and there needs to be more sort of public profile for women scientists. But I have quite a lot to do with education and primary schools. I'm a school governor, and I think it's very much changing in schools at the moment, where girls are being encouraged to do more science and to see it as a career. And I think over the course of the next 20 years or so, I think we're going to see a very big change, because science is now cool.
Sarah Durant, many thanks for coming into the studio and for pointing out that science is cool.
Thank you.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. This is Weekend, live from London.